Therefore, there is no one but you. So, of course, this is Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami surrendering to Lord Chaitanya and praying that he deliver them from their entanglement in the Muslim government. Text 200, if you simply deliver us by your transcendental strength, then certainly your name will be known as Patita Pavana, the savior of the fallen. Let us speak one word that is very true. Plainly hear us, O merciful one. There is no other object of mercy within the three worlds but us. We are the most fallen. Therefore, by showing us your mercy is most successful. Let the power of your mercy be exhibited throughout the entire universe. And he quotes from Stotna Ratna 47. Namrsa padamartameva me shunuvigyan apannam ekamagrata yadime nadayishyase tada dayaniyas tabanata durlabha. Let us submit one piece of information before you, dear Lord. It is not at all false, but is full of meaning. It is this: if you are not merciful upon us, then it will be very, very difficult to find more suitable candidates for your mercy. Stotra Ratna 47, this book is by Sri Yamunacharya. Text 204. We are very depressed at being unfit candidates for your mercy, yet since we have heard of your transcendental qualities, we are very much attracted to you. Indeed, we are like a dwarf who wants to capture the moon. Although we are completely unfit, a desire to receive your mercy is awakening within our minds. And then he quotes another verse from the Stotra Ratna, this one number 43. This is, Prabhupada would often quote this. Bhavandame vanucharan harantara prashanda nikshe samanora tantara kadahamai kantika nitya kinkara paharshayasyami sanata jivitam. By serving you constantly, one is freed from all material desires and is completely pacified. When shall I engage as your permanent, eternal servant and always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? Srila Prabhupada's purport. In his teachings to Sanatana Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has declared every living entity to be an eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the constitutional position of all living entities. Just as a dog or servant is very much satisfied to get a competent, perfect master, or as a child is completely satisfied to possess a competent father, so the living entity is satisfied by completely engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. He, the living entity, thereby knows that he has a competent master to save him from all kinds of danger. Unless the living entity comes to the guaranteed protection of the Supreme Lord, he is full of anxiety. This life of anxiety is called material existence. To be completely satisfied and devoid of anxiety, one must come to the position of eternally rendering service to the Supreme Lord. This verse is also from the Stotra Ratna 43 by Sri Yamunacharya. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So as I was kind of contemplating this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I was thinking how significant this episode is for all of us. Because when we think about it, everything that we read, the whole mood of this movement, the inspiration certainly for Srila Prabhupada to come and begin this movement, is all coming from the Goswamis, especially Rupa Goswami. We know Srila Prabhupada was right there living in Radha-Damodar temple, contemplating the bhajan kirtan in the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. And the writings of the Goswamis, headed by the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is the, if you think about what we do in the morning for the morning program, it's completely modeled on the essence of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the practices there, five most important practices. So this episode where they fully surrender to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the door that opens up everything that's come after that. Because Lord Chaitanya, as we know, he didn't write very much. The Shikshastaka, maybe the Jagannathastaka, it says it emanated from his mouth, he maybe just chanted it. But he expanded his teachings through his followers, specifically Rupa Goswami, Sanatan, Raghunath Das Goswami, and others who came after them and who followed in their footsteps. So this is very important for us to contemplate on, this episode of full surrender and what they're actually expressing here. So first of all, a little background. We know that Dabir Khas and Sakar Malak, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami had been serving in the government of the Nawab Hussein Shah. And they felt themselves to be fallen from that. They were born in very exalted Saraswata Brahmin families. They were extremely learned. And they were pure Brahmins, Vaishnav Brahmins. I was surprised to learn some time ago that the Hansa Dutta, does everyone know what the Hansa Dutta is? Hansa Dutta is the swan letter. That's the name of it, the swan messenger, actually the swan messenger. And it's a book of great separation of Radha from Krishna, written by Rupa Goswami before he met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is a book that he wrote in his youth, before he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And some of those verses are quoted in the purports in the Anchalila of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So what happened was that they were coerced into serving in that Muslim government. That has come out, but I'm not sure if everyone knows that fact. That it's not that they kind of, you know, wanted to be opulent and wanted to get all of that influence and power and aristocracy, and then they joined the government. They were coerced into serving in that government. And how were they coerced? Well, he threatened to persecute the Brahmins and the Vaishnavs if they didn't join the government and help control them. Just as the British, they were very intelligent. How are they going to control this huge country of India for so many years with just a small number of people, a small number of leaders? Well, they induced some of the local influential people to become leaders and magistrates and so forth, and to in that way to govern the country. So this was going on, and eventually, of course, they met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is the episode, and they're praying that he deliver them. Now, of course, he does deliver them, and he orders them to go to Vrindavan, retire, to escape from that government service, to write books, to excavate the places of pastimes, and in this way to serve him and expand the movement, expand the Krishna consciousness movement in that way. One may contemplate that and ask, well, what happened then after that? Did the Nawab then persecute the Brahmins? Was that what happened? Well, I don't know if there's a historical account of it. I'm not familiar with it. But I kind of compare it to Arjun's position. In one sense, Arjun was a soft-hearted Vaishnav. He was a Kshatriya. But when it came time to fight the war, he had so many arguments from the Vedas why he didn't want to do that, because it would be a degradation of society. It was his guru, his military guru, Dronacharya, the grandfather Bhishma. There were all of these arguments based on his feeling for others, not because he was afraid to fight, but because, or die, but because of that mood. So despite that, despite any risk that was evident there, when they surrendered to Lord Chaitanya, that means whatever you order. You know, we're not going to say, but, you know, assuming this happened, but what about the Brahmins and the Vaishnavs who may be persecuted by the Nawab himself if we leave? That wasn't even, it's not even mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So the idea is that they're surrendering to Lord Chaitanya, going to Vrindavan, doing exactly what he wanted, and becoming who we know as Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, has created such good fortune for the entire world. Think about it. Thousands and millions and even billions of people, human beings, living entities, will come to the lotus feet of Krishna on the basis of their activity and their writing their books and their purity and their example and everything. So sometimes it's like that, and that for the greater good, the Vaishnavas sometimes do things that appear on the material level to be cruel. This is a classic for taking sannyas. From one point of view, you know, Lord Chaitanya, when he took sannyas, it was like a thunderbolt in the heart of Shachimata, Right? And all the, you know, his friends and associates, devotees in Navadvip, you know, they were like rending their cloth, ripping their hair, you know, that he was now going to go and he was going to leave. But Lord Chaitanya was adamant for the greater good of the world, you know, externally, that this was one of the reasons, and a main reason for his leaving and taking up this danda. And it happens often in other cases where the family is, you know, put in difficulty. There's a lot of emotion involved. But real sannyas means, of course, to become, just as this verse describes, and we're going to discuss this in a minute, this prayer of Stotra Ratna, to become a sold-out servant of the Lord with no end, with no interruption, nirantara, to become sannyas, basically, fully surrendered. So this description also, self-description, this is characteristic of the great Vaishnavas, is that they see themselves as the most fallen. And they really see themselves that way. There's a passage in the, I think it's the Adi Lila, where Krishna's Kaviraj is describing himself in that way. That I am, you know, anyone who chants my name is degraded, goes to hell. What to speak of associating with me, I'm worse than the worms and stool, you know. But somehow or other, there's always a positive aspect. Somehow or other, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'm writing this book, I'm going on, because this is what they want me to do. So this feeling of complete helplessness without the mercy of Krishna, without the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, without the mercy of Guru and Vaishnavas, is a proper attitude to have if we want to advance in devotional service. Our illusion in this world is that we have an independent power to make our way to do anything, advance in devotional service. Actually, the strength of the Vaishnava, as opposed to, say, the Jnana Yogi, the Karma Yogi, or the Dhyana Yogi, is that they evoke, by their helpless pleading and their sincere prayers, and everything they do is a prayer, especially the chanting of the holy name, the mercy of the Lord. And once the mercy of the Lord is there, the empowerment is there. And the Shakti empowers you to be able to follow devotional service and to be able to do everything else, induce others to follow devotional service. So that opening up the channel, if you will, to have Krishna work through you, that's the essence of bhakti. And it only comes through this, you know, Trinadapisuni Chena mood. And you see so many writings like this, so much of our great acharyas. When we read the songs of Narottam, or we sing the songs of Narottam, Bhakti Vinod, we find the same mood in so many of these songs, isn't it? Is that I'm unqualified. I've spent my whole life, many, many lifetimes, trying to serve this body and forgetting you. And now, you know, I'm at the fag end of my life. Please save me. Please bring me up. I know I'm unqualified. Still, I do that. I pray to you that way. So the most qualified devotees pray in that way. You know, when we actually look at the quality of Rupa and Sanatan, Bhakti Nod Narottam, they're completely pure, completely surrendered, but they see themselves in that way. And that inspires their desperate pleading to the Lord. So this is reflected in this prayer of Sri Yamunacharya. Srila Prabhupada would often quote this. It's given as an example of the real mood for Dasya Ras. Dasya Ras. And one point I wanted to make is that we should always remember, because we're in a movement that is saturated with, you know, so much wonderful description, literature, paintings, songs, plays, everything, which deals with sometimes the highest levels of devotional service. Radha, Shama, Sundar are there. And anytime you want. It used to be in the old days that when these books like Govinda Lilamrita and all these books were written, they were very restricted. It's not that everybody had access to those. So much so, of course, this is maybe to another cause, but so much so that even the Chaitanya Charitamrita was so difficult for Bhaktivinoda Thakur to get. You know, of course, that may be because Lord Chaitanya's movement had been eclipsed a little bit because of the upper sampradayas. But the point is that not everybody had access to everything. Is that these books were rare, they were hand-copied, and then when someone was eligible to read Stavamala and the more advanced things, and they were given those things and they were given access. Well, that's not the way it is now. We live in an age where anybody can get anything they want. You can get on the internet right now. Google Govindali Lamrita. You'll have the text in your hand within seconds. But the question is, do we really have the adhikari? Do we have the eligibility, the qualifications for entering into these, into the mood of these literatures? And what I wanted to mention is that here's this perfect expression for dasya ras. Now everyone is eligible to enter into that. But we should also remember that there's also a rasa before that, and that's shanta ras, which we don't think about very much. But when you study the teachings to Rupa Goswami, in chapter 19 of this Madhya Lila, there are some very nice purports where it's described what are the qualities of dasya ras, shanta ras, sakya ras, vatsalya, and madhurya. They're all, it's described there. So you can't jump over. In other words, each of the next rasas contain the qualities of the previous rasa. So first shanta ras. Now shanta ras means you're always thinking of Krishna. As its name implies, you're completely peaceful, means you're not agitated by desire for sense gratification. And you're very blissful just being Krishna conscious. But you don't have an active service to perform. Even in Goloka, or Gokula Vrindavan in Goloka, there are some devotees in Shanta Ras, like the grass. You know, the grass just waits there. It doesn't really have anything. Now, sometimes, you know, it's stepped on by Krishna, that's the high point, you know, we did something. But basically, it's just happy being Krishna conscious. But that's a very exalted state. It's almost like, you know, the yogis being in samadhi, but being completely free from material desire. Now, this is, of course, pure shantara, pure dasya-ras. And there are certainly servants, as we know, in Goloka, and certainly in Vaikuntha. So what is that quality of dasya? Well, the same qualities are there. The qualities of always thinking of Krishna, being completely free from sense gratification or desire for sense gratification, but also having that impetus, I want to serve. I perform some service. And because of that desire to serve, Krishna gives some active service for you according to your specific, you know, mode and that you have within dasya ras. And there's so many servants. And the sakya ras contains those same two. In other words, when it's always thinking of Krishna, completely peaceful, free of sense gratification, and blissfully serving, but because the service means that you please the master the most, right? In other words, there's different levels of service. So Krishna is more pleased when there is a slackening, if you will, of the awe and reverence aspect, and one becomes a friend of Krishna. In other words, those friends that are cavorting with Krishna out in the forest there, playing with him, sometimes jumping on his back, insulting him a little bit, playing pranks and all of these things, they're always thinking of Krishna. They want to serve him like anything. And of course, they're completely free of any desire for sense gratification. But Krishna is enjoying that service even more than the awe and reverence. Because he wants to forget that he's God. You know, sometimes you think, as Prabhupada said, you can learn a lot about, you can understand a lot about Krishna by contemplating ourselves. Now just think about what you would do if you were God. Okay, so I'm all powerful, right? I've got unlimited power. I know everything. I can create anything I want, right? Okay, well, what's the fun in that, right? In other words, that's that kind of gets old, you know? But what's really the source of pleasure, as we can tell by our own lives, is interaction, is relationship with others and even with things, right? We have so many relationships with things, but it gives us pleasure to give and receive love, to give and receive affection, to serve and be served in that way. So, therefore, if I'm God, I want to expand so I can have those relationships, personal relationships, in the highest degree in perfection. And therefore, eko bahusyam, it is said, he's one, but he expands as many. Raso vai saha, these are little phrases from the Upanishads. But he himself is rasa. In other words, what he's hankering for is this loving relationship. So there is a relationship where, you know, you're God and you're being served. That's the relationship. But that also is not the sweetest thing. Imagine if everybody was afraid of you and they just served you, you know. Well, okay, there's some rasa there, but it's not very enjoyable. What's really enjoyable is an intimate rasa, as we know. When people will go on vacation, they'll go for, you know, travel across the country to see their friends, as opposed to, you know, someone's a boss, say, in an industry in California. He's got all these servants that he pays, you know, or even someone may serve him, you know, spontaneously. But he'll go to see his friends and relatives because there's a more intimate service there. So Krishna wants that. They're the best servants. And then beyond that, you have the beyond the friendship rasa, you have the vatsalya rasa, where you have all of the others. You know, as Prabhupada said, who can be a better friend of the children than the parents? Right? In other words, they're always seeing to their needs. They're always concerned for their welfare. They're ready to do everything. But at the same time, there's this idea of maintenance. You know, Krishna covers his opulence so much that Mother Yashoda really thinks that Krishna's dependent on her. And she's always in the anxiety of maternal love, you know, which can be real misery on the material plane. You know, your child goes out, you know, is he going to be safe? Or maybe he got kidnapped, he's back home, you know, or whatever. Or the child gets sick, you know, the anxiety that they're, I can only imagine, I haven't had any children. But that tie is so powerful to a child. Prabhupada said it's the closest thing, this selfless love. So you can imagine if that object of your anxiety is actually Krishna. That's Yashoda's love and Nanda's love, and all the elders have that for Krishna. And they see him as a little mischievous boy, you know. He needs sustenance, he needs protection. I was just reading the other day, you know, when Krishna gets attacked by Putana, gets attacked by Trinavarta. So all the gopis, you know, they're devastated when the attack is going on, especially Trinavarta, because it lasts a little longer. And then when he comes back and he's somehow miraculously saved, they think, oh, you know, we got another chance. So they chant all these mantras. You know, they get the Brahmins to chant all these protective mantras with the names, may Govinda protect your head, may this, you know, there's every part of the body. You know, if you read the Krishna book, it's wonderful. So what are they doing there? They're saying, well, oh, he needs protection from the gods, from the planets, you know, like that. So Krishna is completely covered over his opulence that he's so powerful in this way. And then finally you get the gopis who have, they're always thinking of Krishna. They're completely satisfied, completely free of sense gratification. They're his best servants, his best friends, and his maintainers. They'll do anything for him if he wants something, even give the dust to their feet, you know, if he has a headache. And they're ready to surrender everything, their whole, you know, they're ready to surrender their position within Vedic society. In other words, they made a supreme sacrifice for a woman in that age, and that is leave home in the middle of the night to go dance with a young boy who's not their husband. That it's hard for us to conceive in this, you know, crazy culture, so-called, that this is like death. It's worse than death. And even they say, well, we can't go back now. Like the Brahmin's wife said the same thing. They wanted the same position. Well, how can we go back? Our husbands will reject us. And Krishna said, no, don't worry. They'll see you as their spiritual masters, which they did, you know. But for a woman to do that is virtual death in Vedic culture. They surrendered everything for that, for Krishna's pleasure. So what I'm getting at is that we can't think that we're going to go from, beginning stages in devotional service where we haven't come to the point of always thinking of Krishna, being indifferent to sense gratification and being eager to serve him, that we're going to somehow relish, conjugal ras as our main thing going on. We'll make a mess of it, and it'll be a big damage for our devotional service. There's no question about it. And Prabhupada makes the point many places here. So this verse is we can chant with great sincerity as far as we can. Bhavantam eva anuchadam dhanantara. When prashanta nikshesa manoratantara. So here's this manorata being spoken of here. Now manorata is the chariot of the mind. You know, in English we have this phrase that I have a train of thought. Right, your mind gets on the train or the rata and goes. Suddenly, it can go for lifetimes, right? So that's what the mind does. It gets into something and it goes with it. And when that's not pleasurable, it goes to another thing. Just like a bee, like a wild horse, you can't control. So here he says, prashanta nikshesha. Niksha means endless. There's endless places for this manorata to go, but it becomes pacified only by the service of Krishna. Bhavantam eva anuchadam nirantara. When it is constant, it's when we stop serving you know, when we forget Krishna, that the Manorata get, you know, starts the chariot wheel start again, and we're off and, you know, into another place. So here he's praying that there be no end to that service, and that he's asking when it will happen. He's praying that it'll happen soon. Aikantika nitya kinkara. Aikantika means solely and wholly, one-pointed, right? Eka. Nitya kinkara. Now, kinkara is this humble servant, menial servant. There's all these words for servant, vritya, das. Well, kinkara means servant here, but the import is menial servant. In other words, whatever you want me to do, I'll do. And even if it's, you know, something that to me seems beneath my station, you know, I'll still do it as your servant. And I will be ecstatic. Praharsha yishyami sanata jivatam. The point is, this is not some slavery that I'm going into that is going to make me miserable. But the realization is that taking this position as a humble servant of Krishna, you know, through the medium of the spiritual master, the same idea is there. One will be very happy to have such a wonderful master. This word sanata is used, Prabhupada explains elsewhere, when someone, for a wife who has a husband, she's called Sanat. She has a master. And that's a good position to have in Vedic culture, that she feels secure. Sometimes Prabhupada, either use it here, or a child. A child is completely satisfied to possess the competent father. So the idea is that Krishna is our protector. He's our friend. He has our best wishes in mind. So becoming a servant of Krishna and having such a master is a wonderful position. Right now, you know, Prabhupada, without Krishna, we're like street dogs in one way, you know, going from here to there, body to body. We have no real home. We're exiled. We suffer like anything. But coming home to Krishna's lotus feet, we talk about going home back to Godhead, but coming home to Krishna's lotus feet is the secure position, the place of peace, and it is the place of Praharsha Yishyami. It is the place for great joy. And on the basis of that firm feeling of servant of Krishna, all the other rasas can experience. And yes, this sampradaya is certainly emphasizes the higher rasas. There's no question that Sakya, Vatsalya, and especially Madhurya are all available here, and not in others. You know, if you go to the Sri Sampradaya, you'll basically be in Dasya Ras if you're successful, you know, which is nothing wrong with that. But somehow or other, we've come under the influence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his pure servant, Srila Prabhupada. So we can experience those things, but we have to do it step by step and properly. And this mood of surrender culminating here, this is the last verse of their prayer to Lord Chaitanya to show his mercy, is very important for us, and to enter into this mood of praying that we will become unflinching, this word, nice word, unflinching servants of Krishna, and that on that basis our devotional life can be successful. So we'll have a few minutes for discussion and questions according to our regular schedule here. Gyanagamya Prabhu.
The idea of humility is so elusive in so many respects. One feeling himself lower than the straw in the street, and yet at the same time having the audacity to pursue something as elevated as serving the Supreme Lord. It's quite often, it seems like it creates a kind of schizophrenic mood in a devotee, and he doesn't know exactly what to do, when, and he'd like to be consistent, you know, focused and consistent, but he goes from one extreme to another. It's how can this be regulated or alleviated?
it is kind of paradoxical, isn't it? And it's reflected here in this mood, or in these verses about uttered by Rupa and Sanatan, and that is that right, on the one hand, we feel ourselves very fallen, and that itself is like the, you know, the prerequisite for advancing, right? Because pride is the big, you know, mountain to get over that we have in our heart, and it's preventing us from feeling the need for shelter in Krishna's lotus feet. So that's where the science of Krishna consciousness comes in, to really use our intelligence to see the reality, of where we're at, who we are, and how, you know, false pride is really a total illusion. And so you learn about, you know, our eight material elements, how the creation takes place, how we enter into it, how many other bodies we've had, how dependent we are just on the gifts of Krishna at every moment. You know, the earth, the water, the beating of our heart, everything is dependent. And it's a total illusion to think that somehow we can do something independently. So just on that intellectual basis, it makes sense for us to recognize our, you know, insignificance and our helplessness. So that is a preliminary understanding that, you know, please help me in this material world to maintain that understanding so that I can remain humble and to spend my life in glorification. The antidote for pride, the antidote for offense, is constant glorification. If you think about it, not only of Krishna, but Krishna's devotees, you know, glorification and service. If we look for ways that we can perform some service for other devotees and always be in the mood of glorifying and serving the Lord, Srila Prabhupada, in so many ways, then the mood of self-glorification, which is really what pride is all about, can never enter into the heart. So that's you know, one of our basic principles, always hearing and chanting like that. And also, you know, offering proper respect. This idea, yesterday, the last time I gave class 2 days ago, was about, you know, this association with sadhus. I kind of found this embedded sadhu sanghashtaka within the teachings of Lord Kapila. Some of you were here on, 2 days ago when I gave class. It's very nice, you know, and it talks about how the very attachment and attraction that we have for this world has to be redirected. And there's so many, you know, the Asha Pasha Shata Bodha is explained in the 16th chapter. There are thousands of them. All kinds of attachments that all together make up our false ego and make up our, you know, material structure. So we have to redirect, and we can do that. As human beings, we can do that by our intelligence. To redirect that attachment and attraction for the sadhus. We're a personal movement. Everything depends on person. So then who is the sadhu describes? Because that attachment and attraction for sadhus, for great devotees, opens the door to liberation. And of course, how do you associate with a sadhu? Well, you have to, you know, surrender, inquire, and serve. So in itself, that recognition of exalted souls is the beginning of our humility. Just like the beginning of devotional service, according to Rupa Goswami, is adau guvashriyam, to take shelter of a guru, who of course is a sadhu, a great soul, a saint. So, you know, maintaining that awareness, and that's where this regulation comes in, you know, because the material energy is so powerful. If we don't keep chanting and we don't see the deity every day, we don't associate with devotees, we're sure and certain to be overwhelmed by the modes of nature, which will, as soon as the mode of passion takes over, the pride comes up. You know, and the aloofness and all kinds of craziness in the mind. So Srila Prabhupada gave us this morning program based on the teachings of Rupa Goswami in his Nectar of Devotion, so that we'll have association of devotees, we'll see the deity, we'll chant together, gain spiritual strength, and remain strong enough spiritually to be protected by Krishna. And that will help us stay in this humble mood of service. And yes, the idea is that we are eternal servants of Krishna. This is our sarup. This is the first teaching to Sanatana Goswami. Therefore, we have a right, even though we know how fallen we are, how disqualified we are, still we have a right to pray to Krishna to lift us up and reinstate us into that sarup. That is the eternal right of every living entity, no matter how fallen we are. Yes, Tulsi.
You were talking about this kind of heedlessness of material obligations, you know, when Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami left the service of the government, and when Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. And I'm not arguing in either direction, but I'm kind of curious. It reminds me of a story, and you mentioned the word cruelty or apparent cruelty. There's a writer who was talking about her experience studying Buddhism, and the Roshi, the guru, was telling a story how a man and his father were out in a boat, and the father fell out of the boat, and at that very moment, the son decides that he wants to be enlightened, and he rows to shore. And the writer, who's like, you know, an aggressive New York lady, says, "Wait a minute," she interrupts him. She says, "What happened to the father?" And he says, "He drowned." And then she says, "What kind of religion is this, you know?" And, you know, the purport being that if you are serious, you know, and Jesus says the same thing, you know, the man says, I'll follow you as soon as I bury my father. And he says, let the dead bury the dead. Right. And so, you know, my question is how, and then, you know, in our society, we've seen lots of people, oh yes, I want to be Krishna conscious in the fact that I have, you know, a wife, you know, forget about it, or I have children, let me go distribute books, you know. But then you see maybe, you know, 5 years later, they're, you know, somebody's off doing something crazy, and it's like, wait a minute, you just, you know, messed up your kid's life, your wife's life, your husband's life, whoever, to go and be Krishna conscious, and now you're, you know, backsliding or whatever, you know. So, and then we see Prabhupada, who did not leave his wife and children right away when he had the chance, and he waited, you know. So how do you know when you're kidding yourself and you're just trying to get out of an icky situation, and or how do you know that, you know, let dad drown, he'll be okay next life, you know, I'm going to go be a pure devotee?
Well, there's obviously no, obvious criteria they could apply in every case. But one thing I do want to mention in this regard, because I didn't mention it before, Rupa Goswami did, he liquidated everything, right? So he has this big boat full of gold coins. You can imagine how much that would be worth today. Billions. And he gave half of it, I think it was half, right, for the maintenance of his relatives and whoever. Was it a quarter? Okay. Oh, that's right. And then he gave, was it a quarter for the service of the Brahmins and half for emergency? Something like that. Okay. All right. Oh, 50%. Okay. All right. But the point is, he was concerned. In other words, he didn't just go off. He did, you know, make some arrangement. And the idea, you know, with Lord Chaitanya, well, you know, Shachimata certainly was going to be taken care of by all the devotees. Ishan was there. You know, it wasn't that you know. And so that is an aspect of it. And it certainly shouldn't be done, you know, whimsically. I mean, if there's some mixed motive there, that said, let me just get out of the obligations, and maybe I'll make it as a renunciant, and that doesn't work. That's not the program. Especially, you know, you have this other aspect, this other dimension, is that in a family of Vaishnavs, when they're full Vaishnavs, then you have to be concerned, well, that they also. I mean, Lord Chaitanya told, wasn't it, was it Gopal Bhatta? Someone to stay. Oh, Raghunath Bhatta. He said, stay and serve your parents until they leave their body. Right? So that. He left, he split. Right, right. And that's another thing, because the earlier part of this is where they're describing, Rupa Goswami described, we were in the pit of stool. Remember that? But Raghunath Das is great. But Lord Chaitanya described that also. Even, you know, it was a very severe. I mean, Raghunath was like the ultimate in renunciation, but they were Vaishnavs, you know, and he had a spiritual master, Yadanandana Acharya, who was a bona fide Vaishnav, who he lied to, right, in order to get away from that imprisonment. So these are at a very high level, and there's certainly no question that, materially speaking, his parents were going to be fine, and Rupa Goswami didn't make an arrangement for, you know, the maintenance of his relatives with the money. So it has to be done responsibly. It can't be done whimsically. You know, that's why, you know, in ISKCON itself, there is provision for that. I remember Kadambakananda Maharaj, you know, he was married, and then he said that when he took sannyas, he never had to think about business as much as when he was planning to take sannyas, so that his wife would have something to rely on, you know, because that's part of the thing, that you don't just drop them and then they become wards of ISKCON. You know, that's a whole dynamic. So the idea is that this step, you know, of full renunciation and full surrender, is a monumental one in anyone's life. Now we should be, but the thing is, you can't avoid it. At a certain point in life, everyone is supposed to, you know, as you get older, to be more and more renounced. It's not like a jumping off a cliff. You're supposed to become less detached, less involved with the things of the senses as you get older, until the point, huh?
More detached.
I'm sorry, less attached, more detached, and as you get older, and so it's not like such a traumatic thing. You've already come some part of the way, and you can easily move all the way into renunciation. Yeah.
That when I'm ready to be detached, it's just going to fall away, and you know what I mean? Like, it
right.
Seems like it's not real renunciation if it doesn't hurt a little bit.
Exactly. It does not just fall away. You have to push it away. You have to run to Krishna so hard that they fall away. But still, you know, there can be suffering and pain. There's no question about it. That's what tapasya is all about. But tapo divyam putakayena saptam shuddhyayasam brahma saukyam tananda. By performing that kind of tapasya, you purify your existence and you come to the point of endless happiness. Okay, so I think we should end now. It's according to this, Hari Bol. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Hari Hari Bol. Huh?